Good morning, and may it please the court, Martin Stanley for the appellants in this case, or the appellant in this case. I want to talk with the court about Camp Page. And Camp Page is where our client got bit by a rattlesnake. And the history of Camp Page is a little bit important with regards to the facts in this case. And we put forth a complaint that was a lot of pages.
We read it. So my question to you is about whether you are making only a claim for the failure to prevent, train, etc., or whether you're still making or attempting in this Third Amendment complaint to make a claim of failure to treat as being deliberately indifferent. And as you answer that, if you would point to anything specifically in the Third Amendment complaint that tells me exactly what the failure to treat might have been here.
Well, I think subsequent to the issues that were raised herein and subsequent to reading the deposition testimony and seeing what happened, I don't know that failure to treat is the best claim in this case, to be honest.
I'm not asking you about what you think is the best. Is it in the case at all, in your view, or not? And if it isn't, that's fine. If it is, tell me where it is in the Third Amendment complaint.
Let me take a look here, if I may. I don't see it on my cursory reading of the complaint.
Okay, so you're here on the failure to prevent, train, etc.
Correct. And the incidents by the officers themselves and what they did or what they did not do, what they knew and what they did not know.
Okay, so you have to demonstrate deliberateness rather than not very carefulness, a negligence,
correct,
whatever.
So what we have here is a pattern in practice going back to when Camp Page first opened, Your Honor, relating to this camp as opposed to other camps in this county system in dealing with juveniles. For example, the camp in Malibu and other camps have walls surrounding the camp that are not chain link fences because these camps are aware that there are tarantulas, snakes, and other dangerous animals running around juveniles who
are
incarcerated.
Tarantulas aren't dangerous.
Well, Your Honor, I know says that, but on page 26 of...
I'm an expert on tarantulas.
Well, he got bitten by a snake, so let's stick
with
rattlesnakes.
And I know plenty about rattlesnakes.
All right. But I think it's important, the tarantula issue, because tarantula issue can cause fear, and it even, on page 26 of our record...
I never heard anybody argue anything like that.
Basically, the question is, this kid was bitten by a snake.
Correct.
The question is there somebody, and who is it, who both knew about the likelihood of a snake and had something to do with him being there, deliberately either didn't warn him or didn't do something about it once he knew there was a snake there.
Okay.
Who was that person?
So here's there's a couple of people. On the day before this snake bite, on June 27th, there was a sighting of the snake.
Just give me two names.
Okay.
Who are the people?
It is, it's Gerald Espinosa. I can cite to the record.
We've read the record.
Mike Ballou and Samuel Rodriguez. I believe those are the three people.
No, Rodriguez was the shopkeeper, was the landskeeper, the maintenance person. He wasn't even there that day, right?
But he was there the day before, and
right,
he just simply left.
Okay.
He didn't say follow up or do anything.
What was he supposed to do?
What was he supposed to do? He was supposed to tell the other people, oh, by the way, I'm leaving for the weekend. I looked for the snake for an hour. I didn't see it. I'm just going to,
Well, they all knew that. I mean, they knew that there was a snake, and they knew that it wasn't found, and they knew he was on leave because he wasn't working that day.
All of which sounds like negligence.
Well, but this knowledge makes it knowledge instead of negligence.
But
negligence it should have.
Rattlesnakes don't go around stalking people to bite them, you know. Rattlesnakes are kind of sensitive at times, you know. They back off. They only strike you if when they rattle their rattles and they're warning you. And they're not aggressive creatures.
Well, Respectfully, Your Honor, that's not necessarily in the record, but this was a baby rattlesnake.
Yeah, baby rattlesnakes could be a little bit skittish. Yeah.
And it's in a particular area that it was found sighted in a particular area. They all left, and the next day they placed and ordered him to sit, our client to sit, in right in that same area.
Who's they? That's the problem. It wasn't Rodriguez.
It wasn't Rodriguez that ordered him to sit.
Moreover, a day later, why would you even assume that the snake wouldn't have moved to somewhere else?
Well, they never looked. They just decided not to do anything.
That's negligence.
Well, no, because it's a conscious decision. Negligence is where you make an unconscious decision.
That if they had decided to look, that was something they could have done about it. I mean, rattlesnakes don't sit around waiting to be found.
I agree with that, but at the same time, this is a relatively small area, and there's no evidence that it went away, or that they believed it went away, or that they knew that it went away.
Well, they looked for it for an hour, or Rodriguez looked for it for an hour, and he couldn't find it.
That's correct.
Which
maybe
sounds a lot like he tried. He wasn't deliberately indifferent. He tried and failed to do what you would have wanted him to do.
Well,
to be frank, it seems to me that if you have a case, it's about Espinoza. So let's talk about Espinoza.
All right. Well, Espinoza, he is the one that was never trained, of course. He is the one that knew about the tarantulas and the snakes running around the camp. He would run away from them. The policy, as a matter of fact, as evidenced by all of these folks, was never followed. They never did follow up. They had a policy to find the snake and kill the snake, and instead what they would do is run from the snakes or not tell about the snakes or do other things. And if you look at this deposition testimony by Espinoza, which we were fortunate enough to have because we had a concurrent state case going, we cited several pages of the deposition testimony in our particular complaint at 25, 26, and I think 27, among other things. He says,
just back up a minute. The relevance of him not being trained might be something else, but it doesn't make him more deliberately indifferent. It makes him less deliberately indifferent.
Well, it applies to the county and what they do.
I understand that, but I'm asking about Espinoza right now.
Correct.
Okay, so it doesn't make him more deliberately indifferent. So the real question, I mean, to me, the slight ambiguity in the record here is when he says, he said he heard somebody say there was a snake, and he, at some points he seems to say, or at least the plaintiff says he just sat there, but Espinoza says he went to look and then said, did you see the snake? And he says, I don't recall seeing the snake. So does that mean, I mean, it doesn't seem logical that if somebody went and looked for a snake, they wouldn't remember whether they saw the snake or didn't see the snake. So it probably means I didn't see the snake, but is that enough to give you a jury question?
Well, I think it is, and also he said, if I'm correct, and it's alleged in the complaint, that he did nothing. He took it as a joke, and he remained inside
now,
the office.
Now, that's what your client said, but it's not what he said. He said, and again, you're probably in better shape with what he said. What he said was he went and he looked, but he didn't recall if he saw the snake. I don't recall seeing the snake, is I think what he said, which
sounds
just
like
be a strange way to say I didn't see the snake.
See it, yeah.
Or it could be I don't remember if I saw the snake.
Or he listened to a certain congressional hearing. That was the way he answered questions.
Yes, well, he did say this was about 10 minutes before the actual snake bite, and I think that the issue is there, then why didn't you move the kids out of an abundance of caution? Why would you just let them sit there and they're ordered to sit there?
All of which, again, at least to me, sounds like negligence. There was something better that could have been done, and it was imperfect judgment, particularly in hindsight. But deliberate indifference requires something more.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I think that would be a jury issue in and of itself. When you talk about intent, you can't necessarily just look at the words. You have to see the context and the testimony and how it is. And it's really, I think, respectfully up to a jury to decide whether certain conduct, when you know something is happening or believe something is happening, like I've heard that there's a snake there, whether your actions are deliberate or not deliberate. They might be negligent. That's true. But I think, again, it's up to the jury to make that kind of a determination, not for a court in a 12B6 motion to make that kind of a determination as a matter of law. Because in every case, that could be the same thing. Well, I shot him, but I shot him accidentally. And so just because someone says that, that doesn't make it so. It still is up to the jury to determine that issue as to whether the shooting was accidentally or intentionally. If it's in an excessive force case, they could say, well, I shot him by mistake when he raised his arm. Does that automatically on a 12B6 motion make it negligence because they said that? No, that respectfully, that makes it a jury issue on that determination.
Now, did Espinoza know about the snake the day before?
I believe he did.
He says he didn't recall that when he was asked whether he, I believe it's in your, we're only dealing with your complaint.
I understand.
Your complaint says,
oh, yeah, you're right. He says don't recall.
At page 25, he says he doesn't remember whether he heard about it previously. He doesn't, then he says, I don't remember anybody mentioning.
Right.
Okay.
But he had seen other snakes at the
campus. In the past.
Correct.
But not the day previously.
Correct. And then, but then there's an issue as to whether or not the camp
acted appropriately. So I want a month previously.
But then there's an issue about whether the camp acted appropriately and the other personnel by failing to advise the people that were coming in the next day of the, that hadn't been there the day before about the sighting the previous day because it was still fresh. There was no discovery of the snake. The policy was supposedly we look until we find the snake and cut off its head. They never followed that policy. Instead, they would take the snakes and put them out, or they would just, as happened here, just ignore the policy and go home for the weekend, not advise anybody to follow up. Well, someone...
What does the record show about how this injured your client?
Pardon?
What was the injury to your client?
The injury was a stroke. He got bit in his finger, and he suffered a stroke after that. He was a very young boy, 16 years old.
Did you want to save some rebuttal time?
Pardon me?
I was just wondering if you wanted to save some rebuttal time.
I do, if your honors don't have any more questions.
All right.
Yes? Thank you.
Good morning, your honors. Gina Genitempo for respondents. Kind of an administrative matter, the record gets a little unclear as to which respondents were actually here on appeal for. Out of abundance of caution, my brief was filed on behalf of all 13 individuals and the county. I wanted it clear for the record that the appellant had dismissed four of the named respondents prior to the ruling, which is under appeal. Those respondents being Perry, Harter, Rich, Marino and Sayens, and I believe the record is clear that the then plaintiff acknowledged that those parties should be dismissed with prejudice at that stage. And I bring it up, like I said, for clarification, since the brief and the notice of appeal does not make clear which parties we're here for, and I'm assuming that will remain undisputed. As to the remaining individual,
write down the names of the parties you think have been dismissed.
Write them down, Your Honor.
Those sheets that the clerk will give.
I can refer you also to the page of the record.
Well, I don't do
I will
a lot
do
of
that.
Writing up here. I'm listening.
Okay, I will do that, Your Honor. Thank you. As to the remaining individual defendants, by my count, that would leave nine. Your Honors have correctly focused on the one that comes closest to any involvement with the plaintiff. I think it's clear from the briefing also that he's really only discussing three of them at most. So for that reason, I feel that he has not raised sufficient issues at all with regard to the other seven. Mr. Espinoza, in answer to some of the questions that you presented to appellant's counsel, did not know about the specific sighting and where it was. It's not pled that he did. If you look at the pleadings on the page 10 of the third amended complaint, which appears at page 24 of the record, laying out the allegations with Espinoza, it doesn't actually say that he knew the specific location of the snake incident. It says only generally that he knew there was a snake.
Well, counsel, it's pretty drastic to dismiss a case at the pleading stage.
I understand
when there could be evidence that would support the main theory. And at least, I guess I have the same tentative thought that Judge Berzon expressed, which is that the pleading is the most precise about Mr. Espinoza. He talks about how he knows how children are fascinated by snakes, and he's aware of that, and he's seen a snake a month before, and so on and so forth. And at least at the pleading stage, why isn't there enough to permit an inference of deliberate indifference on his part?
Because of the high standard that's required to make out a deliberate indifference claim. It's much like making a punitive damages claim in a...
Well, all right, to be specific, he had some vague knowledge that there had been a snake the day before.
Yes.
A kid says, watch out for the snake. He hears it. He knows that there's a boy who has been told to sit in one place and is there where the snake is.
And he looks for the snake.
And he says something like, I looked at it more closely a moment ago. He didn't get up and look for the snake. He turned around and looked to see if there was a snake. And then he says, and I don't recall seeing a snake, which is a very odd thing to say. Because he didn't say, no, I didn't see the snake. He says, I don't recall seeing a snake, which seems to mean, well, maybe he did see a snake.
I don't think it's proper to plead or to draw that inference when it's not specifically.
And then there's the question of whether sitting there, rather than getting up and going to look and actually and telling the kid to move or saying, where did you see the snake, or investigating in any way, is deliberate indifference.
It is pleaded that he thought it was a joke. That's pleaded. Now, it may not be true, but that we're only looking at the pleadings here.
I understand. It's pleaded that he looked for it, that he thought it was a joke, but he looked for it. And what's unique
about
this case...
Which I understood to mean, sitting where he was, not going outside, not making any actual effort to investigate, but glancing over, which is certainly consistent with him saying, I don't recall, he glanced over to see if he saw a snake.
I'm not certain that that's all that the record says, because in this situation...
The record doesn't say anything. It's pleadings. We're looking at the pleadings. And if you take everything on pages 9 through 11 of the complaint, I have difficulty seeing why it wouldn't at least be permissible under that complaint to infer that Mr. Espinoza was deliberately indifferent to the danger.
See, I don't think simply looking away when there's no actual sighting of a snake amounts to deliberate indifference.
There was a sighting. The guy said, watch out for the snake.
He didn't say, I see a snake. The plaintiff didn't
react
what
does that
to the
mean?
Snake. He didn't see a snake.
Watch out for the non-existent snake? What does that mean?
This isn't a situation where anybody said there's a snake right there. You have to look at the situation and the reasonableness.
I'm going for a hike down a trail, and somebody says to me, watch out for the snake. That I would certainly take that to mean somewhere near you there's a snake that you should worry about.
And you look, and if you don't see a snake, what are you supposed to do then? The question is, was he reasonable
in
not
doing
more?
First of all,
he
didn't say, I didn't see the snake. And second of all, he didn't say that he made any effort to go look for the snake.
He does, though, in his deposition, which is attached as an exhibit to the complaint. And you have to...
I wanted to ask you that, by the way. My assumption is that the deposition is regarded as part of the complaint. Do you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And that's part of the problem for plaintiff here. He has, in a sense, overpleaded it because we've got a far more precise description of what these parties knew and didn't know. And him simply assuming what they knew is not sufficient when you've got the additional facts attached to the complaint. And you have to look at those exhibits and give those more credence. But the bottom line is, as to all these people, he is drawing a new or should have known argument with regard to what they knew. And even if they generally knew that there was a snake, nobody knew that it was in that specific, that it was in that specific location, because the fact was it wasn't.
This is what he said. He said, I didn't know if the miner was joking or being serious. And perhaps Jonathan didn't know either. So what did you do? I turned around to look and see if the snake was really there. He was basically, he was in, but he didn't leave the office. I turned around to look, and I don't recall seeing a snake. That's what he said.
Well, he opened the door to look out. It's not like he's sitting there, as plaintiff tried to say.
He'd already opened the door, not for that reason, but he had opened the door, and he turned around to look, but he didn't go and check out if there was a snake there. But he didn't ask the kid who said he saw the snake, where'd you see the snake? He doesn't say he did that.
But again, how does that get to this deliberate, intentional, knowing kind of cause of action he's trying to make here? As Your Honor has suggested, if there's a duty, there might be a negligence claim, and that's the issue we're litigating still in the state court.
They want
but
to describe the snake. Describe the snake.
As of that point or since, do we know now?
Do you have the snake?
I'm not aware of that. I don't think there's a dispute that it was a rattlesnake.
Well, what do you think one can make out of these don't recall questions?
How do you know that?
Excuse me?
How do you know it was a rattlesnake?
I don't personally know. I'm taking the pleading as it is, but I think that's undisputed in the record outside of the complaint.
Do baby rattlesnakes have rattles?
I believe they do. I mean, there's a number of issues that would come up, you know, what the kid might have been doing, you know, what the kid should have done, could he have protected himself, that kind of thing.
What are the elements of deliberate indifference? He has to know there's a danger. Well, he certainly knows there's a danger. He knows there are rattlesnakes, and he knows there's a danger if there's a rattlesnake.
He has to know there's a danger of a serious injury. It has to be more serious than just this guy.
Rattlesnake bites are serious.
Well, it is.
Potentially.
If it's imminent and right there, but you have to knowingly know there's something you should be doing that you're not doing. You have to deliberately intend that. I don't care if the kid gets hurt.
I remember that mind saying to Jonathan or Herrera, "Hey, man, there's a snake over there where you're sitting." That certainly suggests that there was a snake over there where he was sitting.
So the officer looks and doesn't see one.
He doesn't say he didn't see one. And then he says, "At that time, did you ask any further questions of the boy that had mentioned, 'Hey, man, I see a snake'?" He says, "I don't recall." What do we take that to mean? Well, then he says, "Do you mean that you didn't or you don't remember?" "I don't remember one way or another." "Did you tell Jonathan Herrera, 'Hey, go sit over there or move away or do anything'?" "I don't recall." So do we take that to mean, could a jury hearing that say he must have seen them and he must not have done anything, or he would remember if he did something and he'd remember if he saw us, and we don't know if he saw the snake?
To make this claim, plaintiff has to plead that he did, and he doesn't plead that.
But he did what?
Plead that he saw it and looked
really?
Away. Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. Excuse me. It seems to me that part of his claim is, if he knew that there was a snake over there where the boy was sitting, one option was to tell the boy, "Carefully leave where you are because there's a snake by you." It doesn't mean that he even has to see it or know if it's true. I think that's, as I read the complaint, that's part of his theory, that he doesn't have to go out personally and find it and kill it. That's not the claim. There were other things that could have been done, potentially.
Right.
If Mr. Espinoza had taken the time and trouble to do it. That's his theory. Now, maybe he won't prove it, but that's the complaint's theory.
But is that a question of reasonableness on a negligence-type cause of action if you find a duty, etc.? Or is that a question of deliberate intent?
It depends on what his state of mind was.
"Hey, man, there's a snake over there where you're sitting." And he said he didn't know if the minor was joking or being serious, but he also doesn't know that he asked him. All he had to do was ask him, "Where'd you see the snake?" That doesn't make for deliberate indifference.
He also says that he disciplined a kid that was getting disciplined there. He was interacting with those children.
And he didn't ask him, "Where'd you see the snake? What kind of a snake was it?"
But again, does that go to deliberate indifference?
It could. That's the question. Why not?
Because it doesn't show a known danger. It shows a maybe. It shows a maybe you should investigate more. It's, you know, counsel has tried in his briefs and in all the other briefing to compare this to a snake bit.
So the point is, unless he actually saw the snake, he had no obligation. Is that your argument? Even though he heard somebody say, "There's a snake over there where you're sitting," the fact that he didn't see it himself means he couldn't be deliberately indifferent.
I'm saying that the fact that he looked at all eliminates the possibility of a deliberate indifference claim as to that.
Because that's sufficient as a matter of law to glance over it and see if you see it yourself. That's sufficient as a matter of law. That's what you're saying. Because because this is a pleading stage.
I think it keeps it out of the deliberate indifference
as a matter of law.
Entirely. Yes, because it requires a knowing, intentional purpose.
You're making a jury argument, and you're really wasting your time.
Well, I certainly don't mean to do that, Your Honor.
Yeah, well, don't do it then. Are you with the county council's office?
We're an outside firm for them.
What's the name of the firm?
Leach Carlson.
Leach Carlson, okay.
It seems to me without these facts, you'd be right. The question is whether with these facts, a jury could not find deliberate indifference.
See, I think the problem is when you look at the specific knowledge it's pled that he had. It's not pled that he knew that a snake was seen right there. It's only pled that he knows this generally. It's not even pled that the snake incident the day before occurred right there. It's pled, when you piece it all together, that it actually occurred 10 to 20 feet away. So no one has specific knowledge that this location is a specific
risk.
Snakes
can move 10 to 20 feet pretty fast.
Absolutely. All the more reason why maybe it was reasonable they couldn't catch it. Anyway, the point is nobody knows that the specific place where you place this kid is dangerous. And you're right.
Somebody says, "Hey, man, there's a snake over there where you're sitting."
And when you're dealing with this kids in a row joking around and being disciplined for other reasons,
you're back to the jury argument, I'm afraid.
Well, he was sitting on stairs, right? This young man.
By the dorm and administration building, yes.
Sitting on stairs, and what were the stairs composed of? Were they concrete? Wooden.
I'm not sure I know that fact for certain. I'd have to speculate.
How high was he above the ground?
I'm not sure I know that either. I do know that he was bit on his hand. So from things outside of the complaint, you know.
No, it's in the complaint, too.
His hand was close to the ground?
Mm-hmm. Well, close enough to get bit. I don't know whether he had to reach for the snake to get bit or poke at it or something. Obviously isn't part of this record.
Thank you.
So, like I said, with regard to Espinoza, because he doesn't know the specifics of what was going on, it has to boil down to a question of the reasonableness of his behavior. And reasonableness isn't really the standard for deliberate indifference here. You got to have a substantial knowing risk of an evasion of this this constitutional right, and you're really not identifying one here where, you know, okay, maybe we didn't look thoroughly enough for a snake.
Have you studied snakes?
Not in any great detail, Your Honor.
I have one last question.
I
mean, it's kind of
a gopher snake apart from a rattlesnake.
I expect you would know better than I, Your Honor.
At this point, you're not contesting the injury or the connection to the snake bite or anything like that?
He was bit by a snake. Whether it caused a stroke and some of the ramifications, obviously, is an issue for another day.
And so I have a sort of technical summary judgment question, which is the fact that if I were a jury hearing this testimony just the way it was given, I would probably say this man is lying. Because nobody could say, or I might say that, I would say, I just don't believe that somebody could look to see if there's a snake and doesn't know whether he saw it, and he also doesn't know whether the boy who he was interacting with and disciplining, he doesn't remember whether he asked him, did you see the snake? And he doesn't remember whether he told Jonathan to move away or not. I just don't believe he couldn't remember all those things, and so I basically don't believe him. Now, is that relevant on summary judgment, a credibility issue?
On summary judgment?
Yes. Not making the credibility judgment.
Yeah,
but the fact, not making the credibility judgment, mm-hmm. but the fact that the manner in which the questions are asked and answered could lead somebody to disbelieve this man generally.
It's supposed to be based on the triable issue of fact and
I understand
credibility.
Is his credibility a triable issue of fact? The fact that he answers things in a way that a jury could disbelieve him and believe, for example, that he did see the snake.
Right. In a summary judgment context, those would all be factors. The problem is the limitations of what plaintiff is pleading here. He's not pleading that anyone except the kid that might have been joking saw a snake. Plaintiff isn't even saying
he
saw
deposition.
The snake.
And we just agreed before that the deposition is part of the pleading.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
But the problem is this deposition doesn't say he saw the snake. The complaint doesn't say he saw the snake. And plaintiff nowhere says he saw the snake.
I'm asking you the question. If somebody reading this could say to themselves, he must have seen that snake, because the way he's answering these questions doesn't make any sense.
That assumes the snake was there. But plaintiff doesn't even say that.
I'm sorry?
I mean, plaintiff doesn't even say the snake was there when he was looking or when the kid was joking. All we know is that the plaintiff pleads that 10 minutes later, with this snake that could move quite a distance in 10 minutes if he chose to, was there. That's all we know for sure. When he got bit, the snake was there. We don't know that the snake was there any moment before that. Certainly not 10 minutes before. Nobody says they saw the snake at 10 minutes before when Espinoza looked.
Well, just think of all the trouble that the snake has caused humankind.
Starting with the Garden of Eden.
Yeah. So your time's up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're 4.5 minutes over.
Did you want me to address anything with regard to the county specifically? Because the issues are somewhat different there.
I don't have any questions. I think we've read your briefs.
Okay, thank you.
Now tell me what the stairs look like.
The stairs were very low, it's my understanding, and I think it was so he was sitting basically on one step and on the ground. His hands were hanging down. The snake was somewhat in that area, and he got bit while he was right there on the ground.
What are the stairs made of?
I believe it was wood, but I'm not 100% certain because it was attested to in one of the depositions that I didn't have here.
You didn't take a picture of it?
I didn't have a chance to go out there yet because we're at the pleading stage.
You're afraid of the tarantulas?
No. But I would go out there, and I was going to make the request, but because it's the pleading stage, I never got a chance to even investigate
further. I would think that one of the first things you'd want to do would go out and look at those stairs. Camp, you know. How long has it been since this event occurred?
Absolutely. I would want to go out there, but it's inside a camp. I'm not allowed in without a demand.
You could get in. What do you mean you're not allowed?
Without a demand for inspection, and I didn't have a chance to because we got kicked out.
You're a visitor.
I don't think that you're allowed to free flow in those camps, although I've spoken at one or two.
You're just thinking about things.
So there's still a state court case going on?
Correct. And may I bring up, just a couple of issues that the court inquired about with respect to counsel?
Sure.
Okay. I think the deposition testimony is extremely important. Your Honor correctly pointed out what I thought, that there was an issue about whether it was a joke or not. But I think if you go further on in that deposition testimony that Your Honor was citing from, and it says...
You don't want to pull something out of the jaws of something else, do you?
No.
There's a saying, you know.
Yes.
Go ahead. Yes. I'm listening.
But only because it's important. I think what we have to also know is...
Everything you say is important. Go
the minor was parked there. And he was not allowed to leave, and that's what Espinoza said. So this is the hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil kind of case. Does that automatically make it negligence? And that's the issue for Your Honors to decide.
No, because this isn't a negligence case.
Right. but does it automatically make it not a deliberate indifference case? And that's the issue. Can you just say, wow, someone's going to shoot someone right there? Or, for example, in some of the jail cases where there is a lesser standard because we don't have minors, there are people being...
I'll let you save 40 minutes for your next argument.
Okay.
40 seconds.
40 seconds.
No, you're fine.
May I... I'm finished?
Just say...
If people are going to be...
Just say thank you and sit down.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. We're going to take a recess at this time.